So we have this passage in the Gospel according to John. So far in the lectionary, we've been listening to the Gospel according to Matthew. This is Matthew's year, year A. But now in the season of Lent, and you'll find this throughout the Lenten season and also in the season of Easter, we mix it up a little bit. And it's these two seasons in particular are the primary way in which the Gospel of John is heard from Sunday to Sunday. And so we've entered a bit of a different world than what we've been encountering in the Gospel according to Matthew. And there's a couple of things we need to know about this Gospel before we delve in. One, the man named Nicodemus is identified immediately as a Pharisee. We need to understand that that doesn't automatically make him a bad guy. Unbeknownst, many of our Sunday school teachers growing up, where the Pharisees and all the other Jewish folks were the bad guys, that doesn't make them bad guys. And in fact, there's a fair amount of speculation now among biblical scholars that the reason Jesus has so many conversations with Pharisees is because he not only hung out with Pharisees, but there's a good chance he was a Pharisee himself. So just kind of let that settle. And when we encounter this kind of a conversation between characters in the Gospel according to John, and there's more than one. This is just one of a number of conversations and exchanges. There's a tendency in from the vantage point of the Gospel according to John to relegate Jewish people to the outer edges of faith. And there's an edge in the Gospel according to John that even encourages that, because there's a recurring phrase of the Jews in John's Gospel that makes it sound as though all Jewish people are the bad guys and therefore shoved to the nether regions of any kind of a faith tradition, while the real Christian, Jesus, comes forward and now claims center circle in the faith tradition. And I've got some bad news for you today. Let's see if you're... It's probably a good thing it's daylight savings, because in 5 minutes you'll forget this, and that's a good thing. And the bad news is Jesus was not a Christian. Does that shock anybody? Oh, good. You've been hanging out with Father Kirk and Hal and Cheryl and your deacons. Good, good. Okay. He was not a Christian, nor did he invent Christianity. In fact, he had no interest in what we call the Christian tradition whatsoever. Jesus' interest was in connecting and maintaining a relationship with God, however you could pull that off. And he's operating out of the Jewish tradition, because here comes the other shocker. You'll forget this in 5 minutes because it's daylight savings. It's a good thing. Because Jesus was, he was Jewish. That was supposed to be my big shocker for the day. Nobody's freaking out or running from the room or anything. Okay, all right, fine. You've been taught well. And so, in effect, what's happening here is a couple of Jewish guys are having a conversation. One of them is claiming to know things. And I want to suggest today that Nicodemus is just like you and me, because we want desperately to be able to claim to know things. We know things. We have secret knowledge that nobody else has. And if they'll just shut up and pay attention for a minute, maybe we can pass along the secret knowledge to them. And there's a whole strain in the Christian tradition that wants a level of certainty that when you step back and take a look, is not ours to claim at all. We know the mind of God. Really? And that really is where our challenge lies today. I've been on a reading jag of late. Read a number of books. One of them that comes to mind is the book Hamilton by Ron Chernow. My lovely, intelligent, and talented wife, Marietta, turned me on to this book. It's huge. It's a big read, and it explained to me how we've gotten to the point and have all along a form of governance that is fueled by ego and self-will run riot, and apparently started from the beginning. And if you read this book, you'll see that in living color. And so I kind of went down that rabbit hole with the book. And then, following on that, I just finished a book entitled White Trash. If you haven't read it, it's an interesting read. It is subtitled The 400-Year History of Poverty in America. And one of the things that I've kind of known in the back of my mind, but this book makes blatantly, painfully clear, is how for the past 400 years, from the very beginning, from the onset of the establishment of this country, we have enacted economic and social policies that have not only created poverty, but hold people in poverty. Kind of astonishing. I went down that rabbit hole. Well, my lovely, intelligent, and talented wife saw me going down the rabbit hole. And last week, we're sitting and having a conversation, and I noticed on the coffee table a book. Now, we don't buy books anymore because we have Kindles. We're 21st century kind of people, and not only that, but 4 years ago when she moved here, we had, both of us, had to unload about two-thirds of our libraries apiece just to fit our stuff in the house. And so Kindles are a wonderful thing because we don't have to accumulate so many books, and yet there was this book sitting on the coffee table. And I noticed, which may have surprised her. And I said, "Oh, look, honey, there's a book." And she said, "Yeah, it's yours." "What?" She said, "It's for you." "Really? A book? It's not on my Kindle." As I got over the whole thing, I managed to pick up the book and saw one called The Book of Joy. You run across this yet? It's actually a real book. And it's a dialogue between the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And I'm only, about 80 pages in, and it is fabulous. Now, what has slowly begun to dawn on me is that as my lovely, intelligent, talented wife watched me going down the rabbit hole, she also realized that it's now the season of Lent. And going down the rabbit hole is not a real helpful thing to do in the season of Lent. And so the book appeared. And I have to say, even 80 pages in, this is a fabulous read for the season of Lent. Because these two spiritual giants, who really, when you listen to them, consider themselves only one among many of us, they're just regular guys, according to them. They are speaking of deep and abiding spiritual principles. And at one point in the book, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and I have to say, just this past week, I had the pleasure of running into a young man named Stephen Solomon, who works for Rotary International, and he has spent time with Archbishop Tutu, and he calls him the Arch. So in this conversation, I kept hearing about the Arch. So the Arch in this book at one point says, "There is nothing wrong with faiths. The problem is the faithful." Let me read it again. "There is nothing wrong with faiths." In other words, many faith traditions, okay? "The problem is the faithful." Because we get it in our head, and he goes on, we get it in our heads that we have to claim some level of certainty about our faith, and ultimately, if we're really on a roll, that we can claim to be right. And when you and I claim that we're right, guess what that makes everybody else? You got it. That makes everybody else wrong. And here the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Tutu are having a conversation about deep and abiding spiritual principles. And then the Dalai Lama throws in a little bit later in that same chapter and says, and I quote, "A self-centered attitude brings a sense of insecurity and fear, distrust. Too much fear brings frustration. Too much frustration brings anger. With a self-centered attitude, you become distanced from others, then distrustful, then insecure, then fearful, then anxious, then frustrated, then angry, then violent." And I had to stop right there. Because that's a lot to chew. Because it's so familiar. When you and I get right, things are bound to get ugly, aren't they? And what's amazing about this passage in the Gospel according to John is that Jesus is handing Nicodemus, that somewhere along the line you and I were told was the bad guy, one of the bad guys in this story, and it turns out he's not. He's just one of us looking for that certainty, looking to be right. And Jesus is handing him all kinds of language and images that have double and triple meanings. Born again, born from above. Spirit, wind, and then water. I mean, all these images that have these double and triple meanings, the message of which is, this is not about being certain, And it's not about being right. It's about being in relationship. Now, I'm one of those guys that escaped seminary in my 20s, and immediately upon ordination began to figure out all kinds of creative, and I thought pretty marvelous ways of inflicting everything I'd learned in seminary upon people like you. Some of you may have experienced a little bit of this on and off over your time sitting in various pews. And if so, on behalf of all of us clergy who have done that to you, I want to offer my sincere apologies. And then there's the Reverend Hal, who, from everything I can gather, is just loaded for bear. And it was well into my 50s, not that long ago, when I began to awaken to the invitation of Jesus, which is to enter not into some level of certainty or the ground that allows me to claim to be right, but rather to enter into a relationship that 95% of the time I don't understand, but I experience on a regular basis, as do you. So, all of this, this scene in the Gospel according to John, begs the question, then, how do we stop being right? How do we stop spending so much time looking for a level of certainty that we can then inflict on other people? How do we do that? How do you do that? Or are you right? Oh, come on, there's got to be things we can do. Don't you want to be right? I want to be right. Pardon me? Do you? I want to hang out with you. She said she wants a relationship. So what do we do? I mean, how do we stop ourselves from being so right that we inflict it on other people? Pardon me? Listen, okay? What else? Accept our humanity.
Do we have to?
What else?
Realize we're Nicodemus.
Yeah, we're Nicodemus. We're right in there with him, aren't we? Yeah. We know, says Nicodemus. Hide the women and children. So if we're going to choose today to stop ourselves short from being right and choose a relationship, how do we pull that off? Okay, choose to be around people different than yourselves. Say, people from different faith traditions?
Yeah.
Yeah, like doing interfaith activities. It is amazing. Have you folks experienced that here in Sparks? I suspect you have. Isn't it amazing when we gather and claim our own faith traditions that something in that moment begins to grow that's bigger than all of us? Have you noticed that? We experience this in Carson City all the time. And it's amazing. It's a gift. It's a grace, we think. What else? What else can we do?
Speak the truth.
What else? Don't judge everybody.
Do we have to?
Find commonality, okay?
Sense of humor.
A sense of humor. I'm going to have to work on that one. What else?
Accept.
Okay. Now, extend all this into relationship with God. In order to maintain a relationship with God, what do we do? It's not a trick question. Pardon me?
Relate to each other.
Pray. We pray is another thing we do. We gather here to worship, right? Not to be right, but to claim our place in the community and find our commonality, as was suggested before, and maintain a sense of humor, accept our humanity, all of the things that you folks have mentioned, we do in our worship. And when we're doing that, when we're doing all of those things, we can give up the claim to being right in the process and just stay in the game with God. And we don't have to understand a thing. What a relief. We can all take a nice deep breath and be here one with another. I want to thank Kirk for the invitation once again to come and be with you today. It's always a joy to be here at St. Paul's at Sparks.